This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, bringing you a paid presentation of the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce. On March 30th, the Chamber held its annual Commonwealth Breakfast, sponsored by Union Bank and Trust. The keynote speaker was Virginia Lieutenant Governor William Bolling, who offered his thoughts as the General Assembly continues negotiations on the state budget. He was followed by several area legislators. Bolling is introduced by the Chamber's Christopher Lee of R.E. Lee & Son, Incorporated, co-chairman of the Chamber's Government Affairs Committee.
Quick introduction for Mr. Bolling. He was born in the coal fields of West Virginia and southwestern of Virginia, graduated from college in 1979 from the College of Charleston, I believe. Was shortly married thereafter to Jean Ann, and they moved to Hanover County in 1981, where he's been in Virginia ever since. Bill Bolling was first elected to office in 1991 to the Hanover County Board of Supervisors and served as a member of the supervisors and its chairman until 1995 when he ran for the Senate of Virginia. He defeated a 20-year incumbent to earn that seat. And during his service in the Senate, Mr. Bolling was one of Virginia's most effective conservative leaders. He worked to keep taxes low and to create a pro-business environment in the Commonwealth. He also sponsored legislation to create a children's health insurance program and led the fight to reduce the amount of garbage being imported to Virginia from other states. As a member of the General Assembly, Mr. Bolling served as chairman of the Joint Republican Caucus, the Virginia Republican Senatorial Committee. He also served as chairman of the Senate Subcommittee on Health, the Joint Commission on Health Care, the Commission on the Future of Virginia's Environment, and the Chesapeake Bay Commission. So he's got an extensive resume and a long list of accomplishments in the General Assembly. In last year, in November of 2005, Bill Bolling was elected to serve as the 40th Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Please welcome him, and we'll hear his remarks. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chris, very much for that kind introduction. You read it just the way I wrote it, and I thought it turned out pretty good. Good morning. It is a pleasure to be back in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. I want to thank the members of the chamber so very much for kindly inviting me and Jean Ann to come over and be with you all this morning. I want you to know it is really good to be here. We have spent the last, I guess, almost 75 days of our life bottled up in Richmond with a bunch of politicians. It's good to be here, but then again, it would be good to be anywhere but there this morning. And we appreciate you giving us a chance. Then I come and I had to sit around the table with the same guys. But, you know, we do appreciate your invitation. I also want to thank so many of you in this room for everything you did to support my candidacy for Lieutenant Governor a year ago. We had some very strong business support here in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, and I want you to know we appreciate that. And I want to thank the 29 people in the city of Charlottesville who actually voted for me. I thought that was pretty good. Did a little better in Albemarle County. You know, it was a little better there, but Charlottesville was a tad bit of a challenge. But nonetheless, I'm sure after 4 years of serving as Lieutenant Governor, we'll do better next time. As was mentioned a little bit earlier, Jean Ann and I, this is actually our second stop on a four-day swing across the state. We're going to be starting out here in Charlottesville. Actually, we were here last night for an event over at the government complex and spent the night. And we're going to be visiting, of course, with you all this morning. We're going to be visiting a mental health facility here in Charlottesville a little later in the morning, going up to Page County for their 175th anniversary celebration this afternoon. We have a dinner tonight in Harrisonburg, some meetings in Harrisonburg tomorrow, and then we're going over your way, Cree, into Bath County, into the homestead this weekend with the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association. Being pro-business, guys, I want you all to know I am visiting there as a missionary and nothing else. I'm trying to communicate to them the need to create a pro-business environment in Virginia, and we'll keep working on that. But I want to thank you for having us. I also want to say it is great to be here this morning with my wife, Jean Ann. I'm going to ask her to stand up, and if y'all would make her feel at home, we'd appreciate that. Jean Ann and I have been married, gosh, I don't know how long, I guess about 28 years now. And we have two sons, Matt, who I am sorry to say in front of this crowd is a senior at Virginia Tech. Although we are very hopeful that he is going to graduate someday. He's turned this four-year thing into a career. And our youngest son, Kevin, is up at James Madison. He's a freshman at JMU in Harrisonburg. And I got up one time in front of a crowd and said, I'm the proud husband of two wives and one child, and got that kind of backwards. It's one wife and two children, but I'm glad that Jean Ann was able to be here this morning. It's good to be here with your legislators. You have a great group of legislators representing you in Richmond. For the past 11 years now, it's been my privilege to serve with people like Creed Eads and Emmett Hanger in the state Senate. We sing off the same sheet of music a lot of times. Sometimes we sing off different sheets of music, and sometimes we sing off the same sheet but a different tune. But they're great legislators. They do a good job representing you in Richmond. And particularly this morning, I want to thank Cree for laboring in that vineyard along with me last year in these statewide campaigns. That's not an easy thing to do, Cree, and I appreciate your willingness to step out and be a part of that process. And the members of the House, Rob Bell, I saw my friend Steve Landy's over here, do a great job representing you. David, I've not gotten to know quite as well yet, but I'm sure you're going to do a great job and enjoy the General Assembly a great deal as well. My friends, let me just say a couple things to you this morning. I'm going to kind of approach this thing from 10,000 feet and then let these guys have at it after I leave. And I'm sure they'll debate these issues that you're interested in. But I want to kind of look at it from about 10,000 feet this morning and say just a couple things to you. First of all, I want you to know that I fully recognize what a tremendous honor and responsibility has been given me to serve as the 40th Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. If someone had told me when I was a little boy growing up in the coal fields of southwest Virginia, little towns called Hayside and Cedar Bluff, and then over in southern West Virginia, that I would one day have a chance to do what only 39 other people in the long, distinguished history of Virginia have done, I would not have believed that possible. But I think it just goes to show what a great country America is. You know, it is true that in our country, anybody can do anything. If you dream big enough dreams, if you work hard enough, if you have a lot of good folks helping you along the way, and the good Lord shines his countenance upon you from time to time, anybody can do anything. And I want you to know, it probably wasn't until we took that oath of office in Williamsburg back on January 14th that not only the honor and the privilege, but also the tremendous responsibility that comes with serving as Lieutenant Governor hit me. Were any of you at that inauguration? You remember it was a beautiful sunny day in Williamsburg. No, it was awful. I mean, it was raining and it was cold, and there was no place I would have rather been than right there and being a part of that. And I don't think it was until I walked out the ramp that went up to the front of that inaugural swearing-in ceremony, where about 5,000 people had gathered in plastic ponchos in the rain, that not only the honor and the privilege but the responsibility hit me, because there we stood on the doorstep of history, where we last inaugurated a governor of Virginia in 1779, a little-known patriot at the time by the name of Thomas Jefferson, who has become, of course, over the years, one of the greatest leaders that our nation has ever known. And what a tremendous honor it was to stand there where they stood 226 years later and take the oath of office as the 40th Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. Now, we have a strange political process in Virginia in many ways. But one of the things that's a bit unique about it is that you can have a governor of one political party and a lieutenant governor of another political. That's a little different, you know. And I was visiting with a group of school students from Chesapeake at the Capitol back during the session, and we were talking about that, and one young lady raised her hand. She said, "Let me see if I got this right now. The governor, he's a Democrat." And I said, "That's right." "And the lieutenant governor, you're a Republican." And I said, "That's right." And she shook her head, and then she said, does that mean we'll have bipolar government in Virginia for the next 4 years? And I never thought about it that way, but, you know, it was a good question. And, you know, so what I really want to say to you this morning is that I hope we'll not have bipolar government in Virginia for the next 4 years. I want you to know that, and I stand before you today as a Republican Lieutenant Governor of Virginia to say this, I want Tim Kaine to succeed. I want Tim Kaine to be a great governor. Because if Tim Kaine succeeds, Virginia succeeds, and that should be our number one priority. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, a liberal, a conservative, a moderate, a Tory, or a Whig, it doesn't matter. When campaigns are over, most folks don't care that much about party labels. What they really want are leaders who will work together to make sure they have good schools and safe streets, quality health care, a transportation system that works, responsible efforts to preserve and protect our important natural resources. That's what they want. And I believe we have a responsibility to deliver that type of government, not for the good of the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, but for the good of Virginia. And I think that's what most Virginians want. So I'm proud of the fact that Governor Kaine and I have been able, by the way, we have been friends and worked together for over a decade now in state and local government. I'm very proud of the fact that we've been able to work on some things together. We had a joint legislative agenda during the session this year that we pushed, and I think we were able to accomplish some good things in that agenda together. We flew out a couple weeks ago to meet with the leaders of Virginia's labor and industry to talk about what we can do to enhance coal mine safety in Virginia. Just on Monday of this week, we jointly held a meeting with Virginia's congressional leaders to talk about some of the federal issues facing Virginia. We will not always agree, and that is not necessarily a bad thing. That is an important check and balance that is built into our system of government. But we have decided, and I want you to know this today, that we're going to try hard to focus on the things that unite us and not the things that divide us, again, for the good of Virginia. Because the fact of the matter is that we do face some challenges in Virginia today. And we need to work on these challenges together. Now, the legislators are going to talk about you know, what the General Assembly did to you, I mean for you, not to you, but for you, during this year's legislative session in just a little bit. And I will tell you, while you hear a lot about the budget impasse and the debate over transportation, the truth is that a lot did get done this year, and they're going to talk about that. But I just want to talk briefly about three or four of these challenges that I think we face as a Commonwealth in the years to come. First, I think we face some educational challenges in Virginia today. Now, I happen to believe we've got a pretty good system of public education in Virginia, but I believe it can be better, and I believe it needs to be better. I believe we need higher academic standards in our public schools. I believe we need more accountability in our public schools. I believe we need to provide more meaningful opportunities for educational choice for families who may choose to send their children to private schools or parochial schools or home schools. I believe we need to do a better job preparing our kids to be a part of the workforce that you all need in your businesses to make sure you've got skilled labor and quality labor to do the jobs that need to be done. And I will tell you, there's more we can do, and in many ways we are falling behind our competitors in other parts of the world. Now let me just kind of give you a practical story of what I mean. I had a young foreign exchange student from Germany, 17-year-old high school junior, in my office back during the session. And one of the questions I asked him was, tell me how education, he was going to a public high school in Germany and a public high school here in the United States this year. I said, and I might add one of the better ones in Henrico County. And I said, how does public education in Virginia compare to public education in Germany? And he said, oh, much better here. And I thought, that's pretty good. You know, I felt pretty good about that. And I said, well, you know, how is it much better here? And he said, oh, much better here. Baseball, basketball, football. You know, and he was talking about all that. So I'm beginning to understand. I said, well, let me rephrase my question. I said, what about academically? You know, how does education compare here to Germany? He said, oh, much easier here. Much easier here. And I talked to him a little bit about that. And you know what he told me? He said, classes are easier here. He said, most of the kids here in the 11th grade, what they're learning, we learned in the 8th or 9th grade in Germany. He said, we go to school longer every day, and we go to school more days out of the year in Germany than you do here. There is a reason why the United States is 27th in the world in math and science. And that's not good enough. There is a reason why we're graduating 50,000 engineers and scientists a year, and India is graduating 200,000 and China 150,000. It's not good enough. We take great pride today in the fact that many of our schools are now fully accredited under the SOLs, but what we don't tell people is that to get fully accredited under the SOLs, in many classes, 70% of our students only have to score 50% on a test because those are the cut scores. That's not good enough. You know, if we want to compete in the global marketplace of the 21st century, we've got to get serious about demanding more from students and from parents and from teachers and from schools. We should be giving our kids the best world-class education possible, and we should settle for nothing less. That's an important challenge that faces Virginia. We got some challenges. We got some challenges in higher education today, and they're principally driven by the fact that we haven't fully funded our own commitments to higher education. I have two kids in college. I have one in Blacksburg and one in Harrisonburg. I want you to know my two highest priorities are widening I-81 and reducing college tuition. Those are my two highest priorities. But the fact of the matter is, because we've not fully funded our own commitment to higher education, that in the last few years, what have we seen? Our colleges and universities have had to do what? Raise tuition by 40, 50, 60%. They're doing it again this year. They're having to admit more out-of-state students and fewer in-state students. Why? Because they pay more. That's not good enough. Virginia's best schools should be there to serve the sons and daughters of Virginia first. And the best way we can make that possible, the best way we can assure that there are spaces in our colleges and universities for our kids and that they can afford the education that they need to get, is to fully fund our own commitment to our colleges and universities. That's a challenge facing Virginia today. We face some public safety challenges. I happen to believe the biggest public safety issue facing Virginia today is this whole problem of gangs and methamphetamine drug use. And I will tell you, if you don't know it, it is a serious problem that is under the radar screen for most people in Virginia. All across this state, we are seeing gangs spring up in many instances, and as early as elementary schools and middle schools, they're becoming more and more violent, and they're making their money by cooking and selling methamphetamine to our kids. Now, I want to share with you a statistic that might shock you. I learned this last year. In the first 8 months of 2005, 95% of the methamphetamine confiscated in Virginia was confiscated in the upper Shenandoah Valley. Not Fairfax, not Richmond, not Hampton Roads, but Winchester and Harrisonburg and the rural counties surrounding them. That's a significant challenge. And if your Sheriff Ed Robb were here today, and he may be, I haven't seen him, but I think he'd tell you, you probably got those same challenges right here in Albemarle County and in the city of Charlottesville. We got to do a better job at putting law enforcement officers on the streets, identifying these gangs, infiltrating these gangs, disrupting these gangs, enhancing penalties to deal with gang activity and with methamphetamine drug use. It is a significant challenge facing Virginia today. We face some health care challenges. One of the things that was mentioned in the introduction by Chris, and I will tell you, the piece of legislation that I sponsored during my 10 years in the Senate that I'm most proud of is that I sponsored the legislation to create a children's health insurance program in Virginia. And as a result of that program, we're providing health insurance coverage today to 135,000 kids that didn't have it just a few years ago. But there's still a million people in Virginia who are uninsured. And we need to deal with that problem. This year, we pushed through some legislation to make it easier for small businesses and sole proprietors to provide group health insurance by joining group purchasing pools to buy in mass. We proposed legislation we didn't get this one passed, but I hope we will someday, to give a tax credit to small businesses who provide health insurance for low-income employees. Now, I think that'll save the state money over time. You know why? Because if you don't provide health insurance for those low-income employees, they end up on Medicaid, and then the state has to pay for it. So if we can give you some tax credits to encourage you to provide health insurance for low-income employees, that's a win-win for everybody. We did pass some legislation this year providing tax credits for people who purchase long-term care insurance so that you're providing for your own long-term care, not the state. Let me just remind you that the fastest growing area of the state budget today is Medicaid. And if it's growing at a rate of 8% per year, 10% per year, it will double in 8 years. And if we don't do something to reform Medicaid and the health care delivery system in Virginia, it will bankrupt the Commonwealth, and it will sap money away from public education and higher education and transportation and public safety and everything else. We've got some health care challenges in Virginia today. And last, let me just say we got some transportation challenges. Now, I noticed you had a couple questions on this green sheet about transportation and the budget impasse. I just want to say these questions are so easy, I'm going to leave them for the legislators to answer after I... Let me say just a word about this transportation debate. I am an eternal optimist. And I think the good news around this transportation debate is that everyone in Richmond agrees that this is the most important issue facing Virginia today. Building a transportation system for the 21st century is the most important issue facing Virginia today. I think the good news is that everyone in Richmond understands that it will take a significant ongoing financial investment in highway construction and maintenance and mass transit to accomplish that. And the good news is that even the lowest investment that's on the table today will generate about $500 million a year in new money for transportation. Now, the bad news is there are still some disagreements on how much money we need and where we're going to get it. And the thing that I've tried to say to folks in this debate, and I know it's sometimes frustrating when you see the General Assembly, lock heads on something like this, is you got to give the process time. While these aren't easy issues, but they're important issues. And what I've tried to encourage everybody in Richmond to do, Republicans and Democrats, the governor, the Senate, and the House, is I've tried to encourage them to do three things. Number one, take a deep breath. Take a step back and let the process run its course. There is no doubt in my mind at the end of the day, on this issue, as every other issue we deal with, there will be consensus, there will be agreement, it will take compromise, we will end up with a transportation package, and it will be good for Virginia. I am confident of that. But take a deep breath, take a step back, and let the process run its course. It may take a week, may take a month, that's okay. Let's just let the process run its course. Number two, be respectful of those that disagree with you. I happen to be one that does not believe it's necessary to increase taxes to make this investment that we need to make in transportation. Many of my good friends who I respect feel differently. But one thing I know, whether it's the governor, the lieutenant governor, the 140 members of the House and Senate, I don't care which side of the issue they're on, I know this, every one of them are doing what they passionately think is in the best interest of Virginia, and that's the way the process works. And we need to respect those disagreements when they arise. Number three, be honest about the debate. Let's just lay the cards on the table for the people of Virginia to look at. Tell them how we feel and why we feel that way, and then have at it in that debate. At the end of the day, whatever gets 21 votes in the Senate and 51 votes in the House, gets signed by the governor, that's going to be the deal. And I've been there long enough. I've been there 11 years. I've been there long enough to know this. Nobody in Richmond gets everything they want all the time. Or for that matter, any of the time. You got to remember, you got a governor who is governor. You got a lieutenant governor who wants to be governor. You got 140 members of the House and Senate who think they ought to be governor, you're dealing with some pretty interesting personalities down there. We just got to give the process time to unfold. And at the end of the day, I am confident that these guys are going to deliver a package that's going to be good for Virginia. Let me close my comments to you this morning this way, and then we'll let these guys have at it on these issues. I believe Virginia is a very special place. I will tell you, I've been a lot of places all around the world. There's no place I'd rather be than right here in Virginia. But my friends, we need to understand that just because Virginia is a great place doesn't mean it'll always be that way. We face some challenges. And if we're going to rise to those challenges, we got to work together to do it. And I hope that we'll accept that responsibility to make sure that the Virginia we leave to our kids and our grandkids is even better than the Virginia we inherited from our parents and our grandparents. And if we'll go at it that way as Virginians, consistent with the great traditions of this Commonwealth, I am confident that at the end of the day, we will, as Governor Kane would say, move Virginia forward. Or as I would say, build a better Virginia. Thank you all very much for letting us be with you this morning.
Afterwards, legislators from throughout the region made the remarks to the audience. The first is Senator Emmett Hanger from the 24th District.
Well, good morning, everyone. I missed my cue there a little while ago. This is always an excellent event, very well attended, and I always look forward to being here. Last year when I came, the guest speaker was the speaker, Bill Howe, and he's a good friend, a good speaker, but he talked so long, y'all never asked me anything, so I didn't get to say anything. So I was anticipating that same format this year, because I know the lieutenant governor is also an excellent speaker, but speaks long sometimes, so I thought that it'd be the same issue. Let me just speak to the session. This past session of the General Assembly, I thought, was a very excellent session in terms of the work product that we created. Now, having said that, because so much of the work that we did depends on the outcome of these budget and transportation debates, I would say the jury is still out. We really need to have some closure to bring this together so that then we can go around a month from now, hopefully, and talk to you in smaller group settings and large group settings about what we did for the Commonwealth of Virginia in terms of establishing policy for the next decade that will be good and positive for all of Virginia. First, let me talk about some of the major initiatives that are embedded in this budget that are not transportation related. First, I'll speak to the mental health restructuring. Very important. Many of you may be aware that it's an issue that I, as well as many others, have worked on for quite a number of years, but we were fortunate this year in that much ballyhooed surplus that we are enjoying here in Virginia has allowed us the luxury of addressing some of these issues that have been long-term problem issues for quite some time that we just haven't got around to. We need to restructure our mental health delivery system so that we take the emphasis off of institutionalization and we put the emphasis on community-based services where in the long run we will be able to contain costs and deliver a better service. That's a goal, and in this budget we have funding to hopefully move us solidly in that direction. First, we're going to, in terms of institutions, the governor's proposed working jointly with the legislature. Now it's a reality in both budgets at this point that we will begin by replacing Western State, Eastern State. We will build new, much more efficient hospitals in both those locations. And we also have plans for building new facilities in Lynchburg for the mental training, the training center there, and also in Chesapeake. Those are positive items there, but have a price tag of about $290 million. The other component to mental health restructuring is what is referred to as bridge money, where we're going to need about $50 million at least to put into community-based services so that we create those services in the community, supplement those services in the community that are very much needed, so that we don't need to institutionalize everybody. That's a very positive step, mental health restructuring. The environment, particularly initiatives to clean up the Chesapeake Bay. There is, in both budgets, I'm talking about areas of agreement here primarily at this point, but at this point we have about $200 million in both budgets targeted to the state providing assistance to local governments for cleaning up the bay with point source emissions from water treatment plants. It's very important that we maintain that. We have put in place some of the most restrictive regulations for water discharge in the nation, primarily aimed at helping us achieve our goals of cleaning up the bay by 2010 and meeting those goals for point source reduction and non-point source by 2010. That was a very positive development, and I'm hopeful that we will maintain those funds and not put them in jeopardy. Further, about $50 million in non-point source. The other areas, K-12 education. We re-benchmark when we establish a new budget. So we because of just natural re-benchmarking with additional students, additional requirements, inflationary pressures, about $1.2 billion additional dollars required in the budget in order to address that. We have that there now in the Senate budget, and we hope to maintain that. Higher education, indeed, as the Lieutenant Governor spoke to, we need to address sufficiently adequate base funding, which there's a price tag associated with that, though, of about $200 million. We need to maintain that. We should not give in on that and take monies away from those programs to put into one-time fixes for transportation. Now, transportation, since mine was responsive, I guess it was supposed to last 30 seconds or 30 seconds. Transportation, we've come to the recognition, I think both sides agree somewhat, wow, we've got a huge problem. We've been growing, we haven't been fixing things, and we need to do something about it. It's probably going to cost us about $1 billion a year. Now, where are we going to get that $1 billion? Well, if you're planning long-term, I think it's foolhardy to suggest that you're going to be able to take that from surplus money in the general fund. Why? The list of things I just talked about. That's where those are the things that are begging out for general fund dollar support. We're going to have to address long-term revenue needs. Now, we have about $400 million, that's on the high side, $350 to $400 million, that we can take out of the general fund for one-time fixes in cash to put in transportation. Where's the rest going to come from? My opinion, the House has basically dug in, right or wrong. They're saying no revenue enhancements of any type. So I think it's going to have to come from authorities, where we create authorities in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads with the ability to toll costly facilities there. We also need to look at additional authorities around the state to provide a portion of that. That gets us, couple that with some of the growth management tools that we can put on the table. That will move us in the right direction, and we'll continue this debate for the next at least 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Next to speak at the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce's annual Commonwealth Breakfast is Senator Cree Deeds of the 25th District.
6 years, we've had three times the General Assembly has utterly failed to meet its responsibility, the primary responsibility to produce a balanced budget at the end of the session. That's not something any of us should take any pride in. In fact, we got to wonder why for so long Virginia managed to produce a balanced budget, not a perfect document. The budget's always a compromise, but it managed to produce a balanced budget at the end of the session. Now, third time in this past six sessions, we didn't. And transportation's the hang-up. Now, Senator Hangers and Lieutenant Governor Bowling, I'm confident, as Lieutenant Governor Bowling pointed out, we are going to reach compromise. You got to remember, I had a good friend who told me once, I'm the kind of guy that wakes up on Christmas morning, I find horse manure in my stocking, and I look for the pony. I'm looking for a pony in everything. I'm looking for an agreement. But we've got major philosophical disagreement on transportation. And it's not really a Democrat against Republican thing. You know, as Lieutenant Governor Bowling pointed out, we're about Virginia. On the transportation, the governor, the Senate Republicans, the Senate Democrats, and the House Democrats are all singing off the same song sheet. The House Republicans in the majority are on a different song sheet. So it's just a question of figuring out where we go from here. The position that the Senate has adopted, and I think that four of the five groups now, including the governor, agree to, is that we need a long-term investment. We need, in Virginia, we have paid for things as we've gone. We pay as you go. So we have some disagreement. In the meantime, we have no budget. RIF notices at the local level have to go out for public school teachers on April 15th. Local governments have to begin to put their budgets together by May 1st. So while we still are very early in the process, as a lot of people like to point out, for those of you involved in local government, we're not that early in the process. We need to get our ducks in a row. The Virginia way is to get it done. We've got some other priorities. Lieutenant Governor Bowling, I think, provided you with a sheet of highlights of the session. I'd point out that the things that are really important here, there are only number four or five from my perspective. You've got a bill passed that basically will allow, hopefully, a reduction in the cost of cable television by allowing more competition, a bill passed that will impose a tax on your satellite dishes and satellite radio for the first time, a bill passed to require methamphetamine precursors to be, you have to sign for them when you go to the drugstore, ephedrine, pseudoephedrine. A bill passed to tighten up the requirements on the sex offender registry. Aside from that, the bills that passed probably won't have a lot of impact on daily life. I thank you for breakfast, and I thank you for your time.
Thanks, Chris.
Next to speak is Delegate Rob Bell of the 58th House District.
Well, I think that everybody's feeling probably a little filibustered. Let me real briefly summarize the House position, and if there's time for questions, I think everybody can take it. But I think the history of how we got here is useful. I think everybody, many of you were in the room 2 years ago when we had the last budget crisis, and I think you remember that at that time the economy was in the doldrums, and we were told that there was a long-term structural imbalance in the state budget, and that every 20 years or so, the General Assembly would have to pass a tax increase, and you look back 20 years, and Gerald Baliles had done it 20 years before. And there was a firestorm of criticism back and forth, and there was finally a compromise that did, in fact, pass the biggest tax increase in Virginia history. That was 2 years ago. Now, since then, the economy has rebounded. We are sitting on a historic surplus. And we came back, and I honestly thought that we would be able to get through this session, whether or not we had a transportation fight or not, without a new push for a tax increase. And Senator Deeds mentioned that four of the five groups are pulling the oars in one direction, but you know, right before the election, or for their respective elections, three of the five groups were also together. They're just in the other direction, because Governor Kaine said we should get by within our means. The Republican senators, back in their last election, said we ought to get by without tax increases. Now we are here, and we're looking at another big tax increase. And I think the numbers are compelling. I was elected 5 years ago. The state budget stood at $47 billion. That was the year we supposedly cut $6 billion, so we went down from 47 all the way down to 51. After the big tax increases of the last two-year cycle, we went from 51 to 60. Governor Warner's budget this year, without any tax increases at all, stood at $70 billion. That's a 15% increase in 2 years, atop the 18% increase of 2 years ago. Now, the House position is that that ought to be enough. We should use those monies to come up with the best plan that we can. And we do, in fact, have $10 billion of money for roads. We do have a 35% increase in local road money over the last budget. We do have money for the Meadow Creek Parkway. But that we shouldn't look at a gas tax increase, a house sales tax increase, insurance, titling, all these other tax increases that are being proposed in some combination by the Senate and by the governor. And so our goal is to come up with a budget that we can all live with without having the tax increases that are thank you.
Rob.
Thank
you
very much. Next to speak is Delegate Steve Landis of the 55th House District.
Let me talk about transportation and some of the fundamental problems and challenges we have. Rob detailed the differences, and I won't go into a lot of detail, versus the House plan and the Senate plan, because I think he did a great job with that. But what we're facing, not only with transportation but everything, is how much are we going to be able to afford in Virginia? We have got a fundamental problem in the process, in my mind, and how the Senate and the House is doing business. For years and years, 116 years, the Democrats controlled the House and Senate, and Cree's right. There wasn't a budget impasse until in the last three out of the 6 years. The problem is we've been using the same budget process for over 50 or 70 years. The state has changed. So we've got a fundamental problem in how we're doing business. Now, just recently, as of last year, Governor Warner put in place a performance-based budget so the legislative branch and executive branch could find out and hold agencies accountable, like VDOT. And one of the things that's part of the House transportation plan is looking at reforming VDOT. How many people can raise their hands and say that they think VDOT is spending your money as wisely as it should be? I don't get many constituents that say that. Now, VDOT employees locally do a great job generally, but when you look at the bureaucracy in Richmond, there are 6,000 people in Richmond that work for VDOT. 6,000 people. Now, that tells me right there that something's gone amiss. So we are looking at reform related to the budget. Another thing related to the budget that I disagree with the Senate on, and that is for years and years and years, to get a tax increase through the General Assembly, you had to pass both houses and the governor had to sign it. Then you made the assumption the revenue would be there to put in the budget. The Senate of Virginia this year included all their tax increases for transportation in their budget without having passed both the House and Senate, and then going to the governor. Now, that's a fundamental problem that we've got to deal with in the future related to transportation and all these other issues. Now, where are we going to come down on transportation? I think Senator Hanger's right. Probably a compromise will be looking at regional authorities, especially for Hampton Roads and Northern Virginia, because that's where the pressure is. Most of the other parts of the state, other than 81 and some of these other projects, I know Central Virginia has some key areas 29, the Meadow Creek Parkway, those kinds of things we need to look at and we need to come up with funds for. But we are going to have to make sure the funds are spent in an efficient and equitable manner. In Virginia right now, with a $74 billion budget, I cannot honestly say, as a member of the House Appropriations Committee, that your tax dollars are being spent efficiently and cost-effectively. And why should we raise your taxes until we are sure all those dollars are being put to good use? And it's not fair to the taxpayers or to the citizens to go out and ask them for more money when that hasn't occurred. And if my colleagues around this table over here can say they're sure 100% that every dollar that's going to every program has been spent efficiently, then I say, fine, let's go out and go to the taxpayers and ask them for additional money. But that's not the case. In my experience in the last 5 years on the Appropriations Committee, we've got more to do to make sure before we go back and ask for more from the citizens and more from our businesses. So that's where I stand on these issues. Thank you all.
The final speaker was Delegate David Toscano of the 57th House District.
Thanks very much. Thank you for inviting me today. You know, I didn't get the opportunity to speak to you last year, and so I've got a 20-minute speech. So at the end of this, I'll move we recess until next week and come back here, and you all can listen to the 20-minute speech. But, you know, I've got the greatest district in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And, of course, I live in the greatest region in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And thank you all for giving me the privilege of serving you in the House of Delegates. I came prepared today because I knew when I walked in the door, Dennis Rook would be right there, and he would say, David, where's the money? Where's the money for Albemarle County in this budget? I came prepared with this. And, of course, it's got little compartments in it. And, of course, some of these compartments have more money than others. And just to give you some perspective locally in terms of your secondary road funding for Albemarle County, if you take a look at the House budget that passed, it's got less money, as you might imagine, for Albemarle County than Governor Kane's budget. And, of course, the compartment for the Senate has got more money than either Governor Kane's budget or the House budget. And we're talking about $11 million difference between the House budget and Governor Kane's budget over 4 years. And you can ask Dennis to tell you about how the inflationary pressures have eroded what Albemarle County can buy with the money that they're getting in the secondary road funding projects. You can compare it also to urban mass transit, and you can find out that the Senate budget and the Kane budget have substantially more monies for mass transit in their respective budgets. Now, I think history is instructive, and I want to go back to 2004. Maybe the senators can help me out on this. But if I remember correctly, in 2004, the Senate also suggested we should fix transportation then. And on the table was a gas tax increase. And part of the compromise in 2004 is that the Senate would pull the gas tax increase off the table on the theory that we'd come back later and fix transportation. Well, now we're back. And we have to fix transportation. But we will get a budget, and it will be a compromise. And a lot of us in this room, you know, Rob and I see a lot of each other, and I see Steve fairly often, too. And we sort of joke about how we don't really have much of a role in this final decision. We'd like to, but we don't. And it's being made by about 11 people, and maybe even a smaller number. We will get a compromise. Hopefully we'll have money for a sustainable source of revenue that would help solve our problems in Virginia long term. And I look forward to seeing you again next week for the 20-minute speech. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce at the annual Commonwealth Breakfast. For more information, visit the chamber at sevillechamber.com. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, a public community service of Wordcast Productions. This podcast was sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce.